Okay, this will be Robert Dean. 3, 2, 1. We're here in Laughlin at the Flamingo Hotel, and Robert Dean is with us. And Robert, you're back in Phoenix, huh?
Jerry, I'm back in Phoenix. It's probably where I'll spend the rest of my time, yeah.
Well, you know, Phoenix is pretty famous for, of course, the Phoenix Lights and a few other things, but you're here at the conference, and it's actually been a pretty good conference.
I've enjoyed it, Jerry. I enjoyed it a lot. I came primarily to visit with old friends. I was not a speaker this year, but I wanted just to touch base with a lot of my old friends because I'm slowing down some, and I'm not able to get around like I used to, and once in a great while, meeting with old friends is kind of encouraging and delightful.
When did you first get involved in this whole scene? It's been, what, the 50s or 60s?
I first got involved, Jerry, back in 1963 when I was assigned to CHAPE headquarters in Paris, France. I went over there on a military assignment. I was a career military person, and I arrived in the summer of 63, was assigned to the Supreme Headquarters Operations Center, was given a cosmic top secret clearance, and while I was there, the following year, 1964, they published a sensitive document that had been under study for at least 3 years. And I was working in the war room. I had the clearance. The document was put into the vault. I had a chance to see it, and so help me, that's what got me started on this thing. And Jerry, it literally changed my life when I read the damn thing and realized that the UFO subject was not merely a passing fancy. It was real, and I determined after a long time that it was undoubtedly the most major important issue in the history of the human race.
Now, when you discovered the secret document, and many people have heard this story, but a lot of people come to into these radio shows and don't hear all the details. So if I ask some redundant questions, I hope you'll forgive me.
Oh, not a problem. No, no.
That had just, knock your socks off, as we say in Oklahoma, where I'm from, when you saw this thing.
It was a military study. It was initiated in 1963, before I ever got there. It was initiated after an event in February of 1961, where a large number of unidentified objects flew over Central Europe. They flew out of the Soviet sector over the Warsaw Pact area, over Central Europe, over NATO territory. And all the alarms went off. The Russians had gone on full alert. The NATO forces went on full alert. In those days, no one really knew very much about these objects. For a time, the NATO people thought these objects might belong to the Soviets. We learned later that for a time, the Soviets thought they might belong to NATO or to the Americans or British, whatever. We were to find out later that, of course, these objects did not belong to anyone and that they were not from here. So they initiated the study in 61 after this event. It took 3 years. I arrived in 63. The document was published in 64. And as I told you, it literally changed my life because I realized for the first time that this was not only a big story, it was the greatest story in human history.
Well, incredible, and certainly is. After all these decades, What is your opinion about it? Do you think it's all the same group of extraterrestrials or what?
Well, my conclusions over the years, I've been really studying it now for 40 years, trying to come to terms with what's really been going on. My conclusions are very similar to what was published in the NATO study in 1964.
So it didn't change much?
Well, I developed a much deeper understanding of the meaning of the phenomenon. We knew in 64 that we're dealing with several different groups, not just merely one group, that there were at least four, maybe as many as a dozen different groups involved coming here from different places. And I've concluded that that's not only true, but we learned in the military, Jerry, before I retired in 76, that we're not merely dealing with interstellar or interplanetary, we're dealing with multidimensional intelligences. And the biggest story, I think, one of the biggest stories in my view, is that these guys have been coming and going and been interested in us for thousands of years. And the implications in one of the most sensitive areas that really is why the lid is still being kept on this is that there's some strong indications that these intelligences have had a hand in the establishment of all of the major religions on this planet. And that, as you can understand, is dynamite.
Basically, when we talk about this, and you've laid this case out over the years, the thing that always struck me about it, originally, like you said, the military wasn't all that far off from what you've decided after four decades of studying. How did they get this information?
Well, the three-year study was sharply focused. It was a military study. And the subtitle of the document, which was called an assessment, the subtitle was an evaluation of a possible military threat to Allied forces in Europe. That was the focus, and it was direct. As I said, they included there were several different groups involved. They concluded that they were interplanetary or interstellar. They concluded that there apparently was not a threat involved because the repeated demonstration of advanced technology, Jerry, indicated that if these guys were malevolent or hostile, they would have cleaned our clock a long time ago, yeah. So the conclusion was that they're here, they've been here a long time, they are deeply involved and interested in the human race and our development and our evolution, but they're not a threat, apparently. But over the years, my focus is, you know, what is the overall meaning and purpose of the program? Why are they so interested in us? And why have they been interested in us for so long?
And what kind of conclusions have you come up with?
Well, I've reached a couple of conclusions. One, I must tell you, is very similar to Zechariah Sitchin's conclusion. I've known Zechariah for many years. I admire his work. I've always admired everything the old man has written is outstanding. I've concluded that the evidence, Jerry, is pretty definite. I would say overwhelming. That some of these advanced intelligences, at least one group, had a hand in the human race being here. That we were probably genetically manipulated and genetically created from a lower order a long, long time ago. And I support Zechariah's research and his conclusion. That's probably the case. And as I said, not only have they had a hand in the race being here, but they've established over the centuries every major religion on the planet.
In this overall concept about this, Robert Dean, the thing that I've wondered about, the religions are all very similar in many ways anyway, but are they conscious of what dynamite it would be if, for instance, the Disclosure Project actually came about?
Well, I've always concluded that if they wanted the Disclosure Project to come out, they, and I referred to the guys upstairs there, they could have orchestrated this a long time ago. There are two reasons why the lid is still being kept down. One is that our government is scared to death of the truth. And the other reason is, and I think you referred to it, is that they, the visitors, whatever you wish to call them, I hate the word alien, that doesn't even apply. I think they're sensitive to the overall human situation here, where they're not about to upend us sociologically, psychologically, theologically. I think they are sensitive to the human condition and the fact that probably a massive display, a massive disclosure, would be tremendously unsettling to the planet.
You said you don't want to use the word alien, which I understand. How would you refer to them?
Well, I refer to them in some of my presentations as part of our extended family, because I think we're related to them. As a matter of fact, one of the conclusions that the SHAPE research program concluded in 64, that there's one group that looks exactly like we do. And you can't tell the damn difference. If they were to put on a suit and tie and sit next to you in a restaurant or a plane, you wouldn't know the difference. And that's always bothered the admirals and the generals. But one of the groups looks so much like us to be almost identical. And I think those are the ones that genetically engineered us.
And the other groups, what do they look like?
Well, they, interestingly enough, almost everyone that I have had exposure to and have done research on are humanoid in the sense that they stand upright, they have two arms, two legs, two eyes, and they generally look human in the overall physical condition. But if you were to pass one of them on the street, there are some of them that are pretty far out. You know, their eyes are large. Some of them have eyes with reptilian pupils. Some of them have skin that is not normal. I mean,
so the basis of some of this, actually, you hear the descriptions of this or that, the Ravens or whatever, there's some basis in those facts that at least there's some similarity.
There are the overall humanoid form.
And the human race being is, we expand on it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. But there are some that would scare the hell out of you if you ran into them in the middle of the night on the street, I'm sure. And that's one reason why they're sensitive, I think, to our condition, and they don't want to upset us too damn much.
When you talk about other dimensions and other, maybe we need to get into that a little bit. It's fairly easy for a guy or a girl listening to say, well, yeah, they're from another interstellar zone somewhere, and they've somehow been able to master time and space to get here. But expand on why you say the other part of it.
Well, science is really, at this moment, traditional science is undergoing a revolution. With quantum physics being the way it is, and some of the newer discoveries about the speed of light, one thing or another, there have been brilliant theoretical physicists who've recently concluded that there probably are as many as 10 or 12 separate dimensions in time-space. And, you know, that's a factor, that's a theory that I haven't very much background in. I haven't studied physics to that degree to understand exactly what Michio Kaku is talking about when he describes 10 or 12 different dimensions. Apparently there are other levels of reality in time and space that we weren't even aware of.
And so when you hear people talking about parallel universes, et cetera, they may not be that far off.
Well, apparently that's pretty damn right on, you
yeah,
see.
Right.
Yeah, I've read Michio Kaku's work, and the man's brilliant. He's a teacher at New York University, and he is one of the top theoretical quantum physicists on the planet, and he covers that pretty thoroughly. And I pretty well concluded that these way out on the edge quantum physicists, these theorists, are pretty correct. That there probably are very unlimited dimensions in time and space.
So really, it's almost, I hate to use an old term, beyond human ken, but it's very hard for us to really even grasp what the whole total picture probably is.
Well, if you were to try to give it a comparison, I think the human race scientifically, sociologically, psychologically, probably, and theologically are in the third or fourth grade. And, you know, we're dealing with guys from out there that are not only in graduate school, but are teaching the whole program, you see. And here humanity is in the second or third grade. We got a long way to go.
Well, your conclusion, you mentioned one conclusion. You may have another one as well. You said you got two conclusions, not only the fact that they... you know, there's four, at least four, maybe many more. What else did you decide?
Jerry, I think the final conclusion that really I focused on most of my years doing my presentations and my study is that this is a spiritual matter. It's a spiritual issue. It isn't about them necessarily. It's about us. And it isn't about us necessarily on a limit of a physical plane. Yeah, I think it has to do with spirituality, the human being, what he is, where he came from, where he's going. And I've learned over the years that I don't tend to belong to organized and structured religions, but I have become over the years, as I've studied this, I think a lot more spiritual in my focus. And I look at on right now that the human being basically is an infinite, immortal, spiritual being. And he just happens to be living in a human body for a short period of time.
You know, that's one of the interesting things about, you said it changed your life, and I've been doing these programs almost as long as you've been doing your stuff. I've been on radio since the late 50s, and the thing I've noticed is that one thing in common about all of these contacts or whatever information they find when people really get ready to accept this, they do have kind of a life-altering exchange. They become more spiritual.
Oh, there's no question about it. I'm a great admirer of Ed Mitchell, for example. I've known him for some years. I've talked to him a few times. And I find that Ed, on his trip to the moon and back, he said that was a life-changing experience. And he says that in terms of spirituality, it opened him up to things in his life were never, ever the same. Well, my research into this field has just about done the same thing to me.
We're talking about Robert Dean. We're going to let you go in a minute. I know that you have a few other things you want to do here and tie up for hours talking about this, but we won't. We'll give you a break.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
You hear all these different species, and then you talk about the craft. There were conventional saucers, I guess, at first. The triangles are around now. What do you think about all that?
Well, there's obviously a lot of changes going on in U.S. military technology. There's a strong indication that a lot of the stuff we see in the skies at night and now during the day may be American technology. There's some strong indications of that. I've had some old friends in the military who've told me that, technically speaking, that we are 30 to 50 years ahead of what most people have any idea of. So a lot of what we're seeing out there is probably our own stuff. But there's still no, you know, doubt for a moment that many of the most incredible, fantastic things we see are from the guys from elsewhere.
So the guys from elsewhere, we're actually a grand experiment for them, or is it?
Well, would you look upon a child of your own as an experiment? Well,
you got a good point there.
You know, I think, honestly, that they look upon us as adolescents, children, perhaps, of a hopeful race, a race that might have a future if it behaves itself and doesn't blow itself up. I think they do have a benevolent, sometimes even a loving approach to us.
Has there been any intervention that you can tell? Because when you have a child and starts doing the wrong thing.
You mean, have we been spanked?
Yes.
Well, we have been very, very clearly guided in a few directions. I mean, one case I'll give you, I could talk for a couple of hours on it, but there's one case in particular where a group of American fighter planes were vectored in on an unknown at one time. And three or four of our fighters, hotshot kids, vectored in on this object, and as they got close to it, they spotted it, and they armed their gun cameras, and at the same time, which armed the guns. At that particular moment, all the electronics in the cockpit went zip. I mean, just literally shut down. And here these kids are sitting in these high-flying super jets, which I might tell you have the glide capability of an anvil.
If you turn
the engine off, you're in deep doo-doo, as they used to say. And here these kids are sitting in these hotshot planes. They turn on arm their gun cameras so they could take pictures, and arm the guns so that they could, you know, defend themselves. Well, all of their electronics went down. And apparently the object recognized that they were arming their guns, directed something at them that turned off all of the electronics. And these jets with these kids in there, were really getting uptight at this moment, start going down. And as they broke off and started down, within about 10 or 15 seconds, as they pulled away, and were ready to crash, all of their electronics came back on. So the pilots were able to get control of the jets and regain, you know, some speed and some altitude. And by that time, the object had disappeared, and most of the fighter pilots at that time were in no mood to try to follow it any further, you know.
I can understand.
They were heading back to base to find out what the hell had happened. So there are incidents like that time and time and time again where they have, I think, said to us, no, no, don't do that.
You know, your association with people in the military, and still even today you're in contact with them, it seems to me from a casual observer of the military seems to be handling these interceptions of ETs or unknown craft a lot differently than they used to.
Well, I'll tell you one story. Back about 1952, a shoot-to-kill order was issued by the Air Force. It was rescinded within 30 days because several of our jets really took some hostile action against these objects, and because of that, we lost some planes and crews. And that shoot-to-kill order was rescinded by the Air Force, and it's never been issued again. So I think some of our top leaders, very early on, back in the 50s, learned, you know, they do not appear to be malevolent and hostile to us. So we damn well better be careful in trying to be malevolent and hostile to them, because it isn't going to pay off.
Robert Dean, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. You've been studying all of this. What do you see anything happening in the future? Is it more of the same, or is there going to be a major event, or do you have any clue?
Well, Jerry, first of all, I want to thank you for the moments, the time you've given me here. I want to close with one or two points. When I first came out of the closet years ago, as it were.
Yeah, I understand what you're talking about. Yeah.
On the subject.
We got you, Jess.
Okay. The purpose I had back in those days was to spread what information I had learned with as many people as I could, because I, at that time, believed that this knowledge and the awareness and the reality of all this would bring about, among human beings, an expansion of consciousness, which I think is long overdue and certainly necessary if we're to survive. The other thing that I've determined over the years is that we're learning and growing at a very fast pace. The whole world is evolving tremendously fast. And I think that in the next few years, you and your listeners are probably going to see some absolutely mind-boggling things taking place. And I would say to the people, you know, don't get uptight about it. Be strong and keep your mind open and be prepared for a new world. We're going to be facing that, and we're going to be living in it very, very soon.
Well, are you pretty optimistic about the results of that? I imagine you would be.
Well, I've gone hot and cold over the years. I've been cynical, and I've been pessimistic as hell. But overall, I think I've matured some as I've gotten older. And yeah, I'm optimistic, Jerry. I really am. I think there's a future for the human race, and I do believe that future is in space.
Robert Dean, that's a good way to close it. Thank you very much.
Well, Jerry, I thank you. Good luck to you.
Thank you.